Major Hun, Reel 33. You were saying that Paddy Doran, your driver, was killed and that he was buried in the theatre.
Wounded, and the Americans dealt with him. Again, one of their units was right on the spot, so everything happened on that day. And they dealt with him fairly quickly, but he died and was buried in Sfax later anyway. And of course, the enemy were going at great speed by then, retreating. And I think that was 51st Highland Division, or was it be the 50th?
51st was the Highland Division. Highland Division, yes.
They were in that area.
50th were the Tyntees, they were the Geordies.
Ah, well, 51st, I think, were the ones that were up near Sfax. I know, I forget what their sign was now.
HD.
Yeah.
The Highway Decorators.
That's right, yeah. They were in that area. And we were heading towards Sfax. And Sfax fell on the 10th of April. So our next door chase was then on to Karawan. And we met up with Derbyshire Yeomanry, and that was the armoured car regiment from the 1st Army. So again, we were sort of getting more in touch with the 1st Army.
What sort of vehicles did they have?
The same as us.
They were in the Daimler?
Yeah. All around still, RAF was still very closely supporting us, so if there was any opposition, you know, it's much easier for them to come up and deal with it.
How long would it take to call them in if you ran into some opposition and needed airstrike? No.
I think if it was if we had any opposition, we would pass it back to RHQ. Whether they then would contact a liaison officer or get into brigade or corps, and that was done from there, I don't know. But I must say, they were, you could see them very active all the time.
But I mean, taking it roughly from your first encountering opposition and reporting it and to aircraft arriving to deal with it, do you have any notion of how long that would be?
No. Because sometimes we'd report something and think, well, that's a jolly good target, and expect them to come and deal with it, and nothing would happen. You'd think, gosh, what a waste. Another time you'd report something and the RAF would come and deal with it. Whether it was just more by luck or whether it had been dealt with on that, I had no idea. But there was no sort of contact to know that you've reported that and they are acting on that information. There's no guarantee that that was what was happening.
Did you have any notion of a safety margin of the distance you needed to put between yourself and a potential target for an airstrike?
No. In one or two cases, we were bombed ourselves by the RAF a number of times on the desert. And even when we were well away from the German lines, I think the Boston bombers came over and dropped some bombs on RHQ. Luckily, there were no casualties, but we were well out of the area of
the enemy.
Yeah. Although we were forward of the main line, still back from where the enemy were. But I think it was an awkward where we were down. That was at where was it before Knightsbridge?
Yes.
Where the line went from the coast right down to Bir Hakeim, but we were 50 miles ahead of that, so they had an excuse for not realising that we were, that's where we were. But we had a line out for about 6 weeks, so as we were bombed there by the...
Did they score any hits?
Not on us, no.
Well, you would expect they might be able to recognise your type of vehicle.
Yeah, I would have thought so, but perhaps at the height they were. They weren't low flying, they were up at a good height and just released the bombs. as I say, by now we were pretty close to the First Army area. And on the 11th of the month, I thought my luck had run out. I'd been sent off on a reconnaissance, and it took me along a long, dusty track, running parallel with a railway line.
What month would it be? 11th of April or 11th of...
What are we in now? What's the last month I gave you?
I think we're talking about 29th of March at El Hama, and then 6th of April.
It'd probably be in May
by now.
May,
yes.
About May. So it's about the line.
No, it's about the 11th of May then.
Yeah.
You were going along a track parallel to a railway.
That's right, yeah. And of course, I was in a Jeep, and that was being driven by Paddy Ryan, another Irishman. I like the Irish people, really. But certainly the ones we had in the regiment were great. Great characters, and he was driving, and we were belting along this track. It was late afternoon, and of course we were throwing up a tremendous amount of dust. And suddenly there was a whistle and a whine, and shells started coming over like hailstones. And they were dropping all around. We pulled up the Jeep and we dived down the ground, sort of seeking shelter from a railway line. You know, there was nothing out, it was dead flat. And the only little bit of protection was about 6 inches away. So we were fighting the dust by the side of this railway line while the shells were dropping. And I thought, my word, this is frightening. But I couldn't think why they were shelling us, because there was nothing else in the area, nothing at all.
Just your Jeep?
Just our Jeep. And of course, obviously, what had happened, there was this great cloud of dust going up from the Jeep, and it was a cloud. They probably thought it was a convoy. Mm. So down came the gunfire. And so, as I say, I thought that was the time when my luck had gone out. And of course, we were covered in sand and dust, and a few prayers went up, I must say.
How long were you trapped there by the shelling?
I suppose it sounded like, it seemed a lifetime, but I think probably might have been 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, a barrage was about 5 minutes at the time. By then, the dust had settled, apart from the dust being thrown up and smoke from the shell fire, but they obviously thought, well, give them a good, where the dust cloud was, they put the barriers down on that, and thought, well, we've done enough damage, and when it lifted, the dust had all settled, and they could see no movement of anything, so they, it was quite safe, and when we drove away, we went very, very slow.
Did they start up again?
No.
Yeah. Perhaps they'd realised it was just a single vehicle.
Well, they might wasn't have seen that they had,
they'd destroyed what was there.
It had been destroyed, although there was, they weren't seen any sign of smoke or anything.
No wreckage?
No. Well, they probably wouldn't have seen the wreckage anyway. They fired into the cloud, dust cloud.
Have you any idea of how far away the enemy...
No. I couldn't worry less. But it was a bit frightening at that particular stage. And that's the only thing I could put it down to, that they thought it was a convoy going along. We did a night move into an area where there was a tank battle expected. But it was a load of mines around, a few self-propelled guns were moving around, shelling us. That was on the night of the 11th and 12th, that would be, I think, May again. So we were getting pretty busy there. A squadron lost some armored cars in that area. And we were then withdrawn to an area of Thadi, Thadi. But we had a few days rest and relaxed amongst the old trees. I think that was in that area where a lot of people were bitten by fleas. Sort of thing we hadn't sort of experienced a lot of that.
Was there anything at Bonthardy besides the olive groves?
There was, I think, a small sort of village sort of thing, really, in amongst the olive groves, and, but nothing of particular.
And any local civilians?
I didn't see any. I think there were probably some around, but we never used to see much of them. There was a road hadn't go through it, and we were on that particular road. But it, the countryside looked completely different there then. We were getting more into a civilization to what we had been in the desert. And that was at that time we had to move as a regiment round to join the First Army.
So you were being transferred from 8th Army to 1st?
Yeah. How? The First Army Div were joining as well.
So you went with them?
Support right round to the opposite direction that we'd been pushing before we were going the other way.
How was that news received, that you were quitting one army and joining another?
Not particularly. No, it didn't worry as much. I don't think we assumed that we were leaving the 8th Army. We went round to support 1st Army. But as far as we were concerned, we were still 8th Army.
You're still 8th Army troops?
Yeah. Just to go on and prop up the 1st Army a little bit. By then, the countryside was getting greener and greener, and a different sort of ground, different small features, fields, and that sort of thing, different type of ground altogether.
So it's more cultivated?
That's right, yes.
Do you remember what sort of crops they were growing?
No, I think there was corn around, of course olive trees, there were hedges in the places.
Sounds almost European.
More or less. But not big fields, not small patches here and there. And of course it was in the area too where we were, was Le Kef and Le Krib. They were a couple of small, but they were towns or villages, I'm not quite certain. Probably the largest villages. And by then, we were sort of looking forward that it was going to be more or less coming to the end of the whole war in North Africa. And General Alexander paid us a visit while we were there.
Do you remember him saying anything?
No, he just walked around and saying, jolly good, you've done a good job and all that sort of thing. He sort of walked around different troops and sort of had an informal sort of visit thing, which was, he was a nice man, I thought.
Did you have to parade in boots and gaiters for him?
No, he came around each with your troop, as you were sort of by your armoured car, he'd come round and sort of speak to you. There was nothing formal about it at all. Mm.
This is while you were at rest in the olive grove.
Yeah. Mm. And this is, we got to the Gublet Plain, which was about 50 miles southwest of Tunis. of course, Tunis was the objective in to finish them. And I think that was in this area, I think it was on the Gublet Plain, where Robin Brockbank, who was a troop leader then, he was in amongst cornfield. And he charged 50mm, I think, anti-tank gun. And he finished out with the armoured car straddling the anti-tank gun. And his driver was killed. He was taken prisoner. And his gunner, Trooper Robson, I think it was taken prisoner as well. He was wounded. I think Dobbin was slightly wounded. And he was taken prisoner, and the Germans were all around, and some RAF flew over and started to machine gun. And got all the Germans dived into slit trenches, and Robin picked up one of their Tommy guns, or machine guns, and machine gunned them, and made his way into the cornfield with his driver, with his gunner, Robson, lifting him along, and got in amongst the cornfield. And Bob Maguire, his troop sergeant, or was Bob? No, Bob was troop leader then, but he'd been with Robin quite a lot, and he came with his armour car and picked Robin up, and they got away.
And, it's quite an adventure.
Yeah, Robin got MC at the time. Bob had already got an MM, and then he'd been commissioned by Alexander in the field. And anyway, Robin got away with it. I don't know if you met Robin. He finished up as a Major General. He commanded the regiment, and then I still see him and have contact. I think he's coming out to the desert when we do our trip.
To Tunisia.
That was all in that particular area, I think.
Well, in that, during that final move towards Tunis.
Right, yeah. But at night we were getting a bit of night bombing, and there was artillery bombing, artillery shelling coming on quite a lot in that area. And I think everybody was sort of a bit more congested. You know, we were getting closed up a bit, a lot of stuff in one area. I think the infantry were had some unpleasant tasks in that area.
It sounds like it's a much more enclosed landscape,
was,
which
yes.
would mean that
no freedom of movement. As
no, and you'd be more in danger from ambush, wouldn't you?
Yes, yes. Although I think not so much ambush there, because I think there was. Troops were so thick on the ground there.
Yes.
So you know, you weren't sort of likely to be cut off and ambushed or anything, really.
But if you were going ahead, then you might run into the enemy and get ambushed by...
Yes, yes.
But by this stage, had the Germans got the Panzerfaust, or did that come in later?
You mean that's the anti-tank?
The handheld anti-tank.
Well, we hadn't experienced it then. Mm. I think we experienced that more when we got to Italy. As the Foss Platoon, they used to call it,
Panzerfaust or Panzerschreck, yes.
Oh, that's right, yes. Mm. Now, we started to meet that up with that in Italy. Mm. But some of the things they used to drop then were the firecracker type things at night. So I don't know whether they're a little, but they're a little bit, they sort of sound like a firecracker. And I think they were probably anti-personnel bombs, sort of little bombs that used to explode above the ground, you know, for against infantry more than anything. I don't know whether you've come across that before.
No, but of course now a lot of bombs are are just a case full of bomblets that are supposed to spread out in a pattern, aren't they?
That's right, and they explode.
And they explode,
just like
yes.
Chinese firecracker going.
Yes.
And those sort of things at night, you know, they're a little bit frightening, Richard. I tell you that that was in that area where they had the flea infested area, and the only time we could sort of clear ourselves from was to soak everything in petrol. Take our clothes off, dip them in petrol, and then wear them. Same with our blankets and things like that. So you've got the stench of fumes of petrol around
all the time.
But I think the people who suffered more were the dark-skinned people. They seemed to be bitten and had the effects of the fleas than fair-skinned for some reason or other. I don't know why.
Presumably by this stage you were, it was easier to get hold of water.
Oh yes, we didn't have the problem as we had on the desert with any supplies. We were getting decent food, we were getting American packed food, you know, tins, and they were good, and there was no shortage of water, and in fact we were, you know, far better fed. And
was the American ration pack better than the British?
Yes, I thought so. To start with, and though the British one became very good, but we hadn't had it. I don't know whether we'd had a British pack by then. We might have just started getting it when we came sort of near the First Army, but when we got the American one, we thought that was great.
What was so good about it? What did you appreciate in particular?
Well, we'd always been used to just the corned beef, biscuits, you know, and bacon, salted bacon, that sort of thing, and nothing else much other than that. McConaughey's, you know, beef and that. But when we got the American stuff, we sort of got bits of chocolate, we got Spam, which was a different change, and different tin meat, jam, you know, all different little goodies, as well as the basic meal. And the biscuits used to be nicer. They weren't the ours for the half-tack ones. The Americans were far nicer. Everything in it. You've got, I'm not sure if they had powdered egg. And I'm trying to think offhand what other things were in. But certainly it was quite a change from what we'd been used to.
What you've been saying, you were coming into good farming country. Were you able to get any supplies locally?
No. Well, we never looked, and we didn't have the time to go and have a look. You know, because there was nobody about anyway. And your mind wasn't on anything like that. You had the rations that were brought up, and you didn't have time to think about any other stuff at all. There was one just about where we were, just we were getting, as I say, quite close to Tunis by now. There was a high feature called Cornin. That was and that was held by the enemy, and that gave a fantastic view over the whole plain. And there was an OP up on there and a few Germans, and I think that was too high for us to do anything about. But we were under observation from them.
Was this a bare feature or a wooded feature?
A bare feature.
What sort of shape was it?
Rather like a cone with sort of the top cut off. But not very wide along the top.
Sounds like an extinct volcano.
Well, I was going to say, it looked very much like a volcano. And I know one day, Matt Abraham, with his gunner, he climbed it one day. And to his surprise, he looked over the top, and there was a load of, or half a dozen Germans, playing cards or whatever, and I think Matt fired his pistols at them and then shinned back down again, followed by grenades being thrown after him. You know, he came down there and told me, you know, he came down like a rocket. But he, you know, he said, I don't know who was most surprised, me or the Germans. But he knew they were likely to be up there. Mm. But to see them there like that, and there was, if there had been two of them, he could have shot them and sort of done it, but there were too many of them. To, So he came down, you know, being shot. Well, they couldn't shoot at him, I don't think, but they certainly threw grenades down after him. And but he and his gunner got back down quite...
They got away with it.
Yeah. But that was typical of Matt. He was sort of that sort of adventurous man. And he's this chap, he's gunner. He's quite mad, I think. Anyway, they managed to get away with it.
In what way was he mad? Was he?
Oh, well, he was sort of fearless. Old Matt said he was a good gunner, you know, but he said he's had no fear whatsoever of anything. Mm-hmm. But Isles, his name was Trooper Isles.
Sounds a rather dangerous condition.
Well, it could be. But I think he would follow Matt anywhere. Good, in a way. But Farm Corneen, where we were, they had an ideal opportunity of shelling us. And we were being shelled quite a lot. This was with squadron headquarters there now. And during one of the bombardments, Paddy Ryan, the Jeep driver, he was killed in one of these attacks, which was a shame, really, because he was... And at the same time, where my armoured car was, a shell dropped, 2 yards in front, and exploded, right in front. And my gunner said to me, he said, "Now, let's drive over that, because no shell ever lands in the same place twice, or another shell would never land in the same place." And so I said, "No, we'll stay where we are." Oh, and I think an hour, 2 hours later, boom, another shell that landed in the same spot, you know, on the edge of it sort of thing. But I said, if we had him over there, I think we might well have
caught that one.
Yeah. But I said to my gunner, I said, "Oh, what do you think about it now?" But we were, we could be picked off quite easily from the OP.
On the heights.
On the heights.
Could you do anything to conceal yourselves?
No.
You couldn't camouflage the vehicles?
We couldn't do anything at all. We were just there and you just... and there was a Sherman tank just not far. And I've never seen anything like it. It had been hit and it must have blown up. Of course, the hull was there as normal, but its turret had been lifted up off its trunnion thing, lifted right up, obviously turned over, and had landed back onto the ring of the turret upside down. And a Sherman tank turret, I don't know how much it weighs.
Some tons, yes.
Because that was the big heavy front on it and the gun and everything. And it was completely upside down, back on its turret ring, which was showed the force of the
explosion. What could you actually see then? I mean, looking forward, you could see the cone shaped feature with the enemy OP in it. What about on the lower ground?
The ground sort of
undulating
down little hills all the way. And I think a lot of things were going on that we couldn't see. Like the infantry were doing lots of attacking, and some tank, you know, that sort of thing, which was out of our sight.
It was too far ahead of you.
Too far ahead. I know some of the forward troops.